Hey everybody, welcome to a kind of like I'm gonna just gonna say this episode's gonna be very like triggering overall. We decided to talk about Quiet on Set on the public feed rather than Patreon, but as always, I'm Kelly Williams.
And I'm Troy McKeithy.
So Quiet on Set, I mean, what are your thoughts about this, Troy? I'd love to know, just what you thought of watching it, and now that you've probably rewatched it for this episode.
Yeah, so I watched it last night before bed. So it's like really, really fresh in my mind. I have to be honest, I really like the doc. Like, aside from it being really hard to watch and stuff, like the way that it's edited, the way that it's put together. The interviews, I just think it's like put together really well. It doesn't feel like slapped together real quick. Like, I think it's being really respectful to everybody involved, like letting them really talk about how they feel. It's horrific to watch. Obviously, you and I have been talking about this for a very long time, so it feels a little bit different, I guess, for us. Excuse me, watching it because we talk about it so much, but I think that the producers of the doc have been very respectful. And I really like that they, one of my favorite things about it was that they gave Amanda like a real moment. And it wasn't just like Amanda Bynes is a famous child star. And then this happened. And then she dropped a bong out of a window. Like, because that's what it usually is. But they presented her like a literal woman in comedy. Like she was a legend, an icon. And they presented her that way. They gave like a whole segment about like, just how gifted and talented she was. And yeah, I've been enjoying it the most that you can enjoy something so sad, if that makes sense.
I totally agree, and it's really nice to see actors being able to tell their story. I think when both of us first heard about it, we thought it was going to be like podcasters and kind of just like random talking heads. To see Giovanni Samuels, I was like, oh my God, I loved her so much on All That. And even Katrina Johnson, like seeing her. And I wish we got to see Laurie Beth Denberg. Like
I know.
she was my true favorite, but I liked how every episode it started with like three to four topics, and it would go through those topics, then just wrap them up pretty much. It was easy to watch in that way, that it wasn't like Natalia Grace, right? Which leaves you on like a cliffhanger every episode.
Yeah, it wasn't that. That's another thing I really liked about it. It wasn't edited manipulatively. It doesn't feel like it's edited to like trick you into keep watching, like you said, with cliffhangers and shit. It's just like spitting out straight up facts. And they also present people. It doesn't feel like there's an agenda in how they want you to receive people. People are just receiving them as human beings should. Like a lot of people are having a visceral reaction to these parents. And it's not because the documentary is trying to make them look bad. It's just simply based on them letting them expose themselves. Like they're basically like walking off their own cliff. And it's, I don't know, it's like it's really crazy to watch people, these parents, be so candid and like saying the craziest shit. And like you feel bad and you want to cry and you feel horrible for them because it's their kids and they're sad, but they're also fucking deluded and delusional and like crazy.
Totally. I mean, I know we're going to go episode by episode, but the mother in episode two starts off by saying, "I always wanted to be an actress." And I'm like, "There it is."
Yeah. And how cool that they started it off that way. They were like, you know what? You guys want to see what a real like child star's parent is? This is exactly it.
Well, one thing I want to say before starting this is I don't really You know what? I haven't been the easiest on Ariana Grande, but like, I don't like how she's being spoken about with like not speaking out about like if there was abuse with her or anything. I think everyone's going to share their story when they're ready, and some might never share their story. And that's just something that like you have to accept.
I agree. You can't expect people to be on your timeline just because you watched a documentary. This is her abuse. It's her life. She has crazy skeletons in her closet. Who knows when she'll be ready to talk about that shit? Like, I mean, she was basically filming CP on television. It's a lot. And like, just because the ID network decided at some random time in during the year to do a documentary doesn't mean that somebody needs to spill all their guts about abuse, you know?
Totally. The one thing I will say is I wish that they dove more into Jamie Lynn Spears' relationship with Dan Schneider. They really seem to just talk about Amanda, but they didn't mention like Miranda Cosgrove. They didn't mention even Liz Gillis from, or like Victoria Justice, Jamie Lynn Spears. Like, I get what they were doing, making Amanda kind of the focal point, but I also was like, why are they harping so much on that when we know like Jamie Lynn Spears has allegedly been through things?
Yeah, I agree with that. I thought that there would be more, especially Miranda. I mean, like she was just as much his like muse as Amanda, you know? Like she was going to events and stuff with him as his date.
Have you watched an interview, any interviews with Miranda Cosgrove as of like late?
No, I don't think so.
I have to say, her therapist must be the best one on the planet. She was telling this story about how like she had friends coming from UCLA and then someone broke into her house and tried to kill her, and she's laughing through it and she's like, "But Kim, don't tell my friends." Like, I'm like,
Yeah.
"Miranda, you've had the craziest fucking life."
Yeah, she's so like she's the way that she talks is so silly because she'll say like crazy shit, but like with a child star face and smile on, like she's doing the Disney Channel fucking wand telling you something.
So basically, we start with episode one. We're kind of introduced. There's Giovanni Samuels, Alexa Nichols, Mark Summers. We're shown like the Ariana potato water bottle scene, which I don't think I realized was as disgusting as it is.
Yeah, so Ariana's, it's like there's obviously levels, right? There's like levels to how dark this got, like, you know, on a scale from like, I don't know, like the, all that dares to Ariana pouring water on her neck that's supposed to clearly be urine. The Ariana stuff, and I think they even say in the episode because it was meant to be like online content that they knew that like a lot of people wouldn't see unless you were like a child like seeking it out. So they really went full. Like that was insane. Like her stuff was really insane.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, I do think probably she'll probably write a book, right? Ariana Grande is gonna have to write something.
I mean, yeah, for sure. She's got a lot of talking to do.
So Katrina Johnson starts talking, you know, she's 10 to 16 years old with all that. Dan was her mentor. All of her auditions, Dan was there. She makes sure to say that he always said, "I chose you. You were my choice." And Dan would kind of make sure like she felt so special.
Right, and like it was very interesting to see his first muse. That was like really like I remember her. I remember her being like I remember reading about her supposedly being like the next like big thing, like that she was supposed to be Amanda. I knew that she existed. But to like really put context to it that like she was his first like doll, and then he ended up having a bunch of dolls that made him $1 billion and made them like super famous. It just must be really, she has a very interesting perspective. I really liked hearing from her.
Me too. And again, it's like these people, we grew up watching them and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see them again. Well,
Yeah.
obviously not in this way, but like
Right.
it's
Yeah.
interesting
Yeah.
to see them again.
Yeah. It's nice to see them have the floor, you know?
Totally.
And she talked about, so she, her, the first part of her segment was like a, you know, really about how she had started going through like puberty. And Dan was, he's very anti-puberty for children, apparently. And she was like gaining weight. And they're like, oh, well, we already have like a fat one on set. Lori Beth is like the fat one. So we can't have two fat ones. You have to lose weight. And it's like, if you could just like put your male fantasy about children aside for like 5 minutes, you would know that all the kids watching these shows look like her.
Right.
All kids. So we're going through puberty too, you fucking dumbass. Like, oh my God, we're eight. We don't need to see in 8-year-olds on TV. Like, are you kidding me?
And that statement alone just sums up the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, you're seven and you're too fat.
You need to lose weight because we have a fat child already.
My God.
Everybody's under 10. You guys are wild.
So one of the reporters talking, she says a lot of kids in this business are already vulnerable. There's a power balance that goes along with employment. A lot of their ages range from ages 8 to 15. And this quote will stick with me till the end of time. It says, "You spend the whole time hoping people don't poke you in your soft spots or in your brain."
Yeah, that stuck with me too. When I heard it, I was like, whoa, I felt poked in my soft spot when I heard
I
that.
mean,
Was
what do you think of this? Because a lot of people are like, there shouldn't be child actors. And I'm like, well, that doesn't help the problem, really.
Oh my God, so we had a debate about this the other night. I'm pro, like, I think kids should be allowed to act, and I think to take the arts away from children because pedophiles are so like have been given so much of a platform is insane. Like, I just think that that is so cruel to like to say no, Dakota Fanning. I'm so sorry that you are like Mozart gifted. We just love pedophiles so much that we have to keep you away because everybody will want to try and hook up with you as sex. Like, instead of just changing the laws that haven't been updated since Shirley Temple, we would like rather not have kids act. It's like, or we could just make new laws for the modern world. You know what I mean? Because like, I think technically they could still be putting kids on ice blocks and shit, and it's somehow legal. So let's just update the laws.
I completely agree with you, and maybe don't have them wear things called Captain Big Nose. And that's like Leon from All That. You know, he says, "We knew being close to Dan could mean an extra level of success. It was important to be on his good side, and he made it known who was on the good side."
Yeah. And then they immediately flash to Amanda. It's like, Jesus Christ. It was so ominous.
Oh.
One thing I also found really interesting, just kind of like circling back to the like body image stuff, was like, it's almost like that you have to assume because he was always locked away with Amanda in writers' rooms and stuff. And like, it seems like she spent so much time with him alone and like with the producers and stuff. Like, you just have to assume that she was getting a lot of this treatment times 10, but like private, like more hidden, handling it differently because she had so much weight on her shoulders. And I thought about, like, you know, she's been so open about her issues with her body and her weight over the years, like, and her obsession with like weight and her thigh gap and surgery and like all those things. And I'm like, God, like I can't even imagine what they were saying to her behind the scenes about like her look, you know?
No, and I thought it was interesting that Katrina said Amanda's dad kind of treated her like a wind-up doll. He expected a lot from her, which I don't think we've really talked about Amanda's parents enough because I genuinely thought they were like not bad stage parents until we started doing this show and you were like, no, Kelly, you have to look in. And it was like militant with her almost.
Yeah, and she, you know, her parents got kind of the same edit for a while as the Spears parents. Like, they're trying to save their daughter. Like, you know, they're so well-meaning, and her dad's just a dentist. Like, they're normal, and like how sweet they are. And I don't know. It's just like that was always very eerie and icky to me because she was saying boldly, like, my dad has touched me and been inappropriate with me, and I don't trust him, and he's tried to steal my money. Like, she said it clearly. And it's like, yeah, maybe she's like being erratic right now, but she's always spitting like facts. You know what I mean? About herself, at least. Like, she's just being like uncomfortably vulnerable about herself.
Totally. Just because she's wearing a wig doesn't mean she's not telling the truth.
Yeah. Her dad always skeeved me out. He gives me the creeps. And I just don't think that you can get to a position that Amanda was in at like 10 and not have stage parents. Like, they've always tried to make it seem like they were the opposite of stage parents because Amanda was so normal.
Totally. I even thought like the kids' night at the Laugh Factory, like I got it. I understand that kids can be funny and they should be allowed to like work on a craft that they want. But I even thought that was kind of weird because, you know, when I was 8, I thought I was so funny and I couldn't imagine my mom being like, "Let's get you on stage."
Totally, 1000%. And I think that, like, to play devil's advocate, I also think that that's like the thing that kind of separates her and makes her feel like this very unique child star, it feels like she was just born with this crazy fucking funny bone. Like it just feels like she just came out of the womb with a full Netflix special ready to go. Like it just, it's so odd. And like, I don't know. I think there's like a moment in the episode where they say like that Amanda was a new kind of child star. Like she had created like a new, you know, category for especially for like girls, you know? And I think what's so unique about her is that when she was a kid, it wasn't like a bunch of people were shoving bullshit down our throats about her that was like fake to try and get us to like her. Like, well, she's a virgin and, you know, or she wears a purity ring. Like, she was just funny. And we just liked her because we thought she was talented. And even as kids, like, we could recognize her crazy ass talent. It wasn't, I don't think that we felt tricked into trying liking Amanda Bynes. You know what I mean?
No, and I think even our parents, like I know my stepmom, she loves What a Girl Wants. I think her comedy could transcend generations, really.
Adults could watch her. Like, my mom liked Amanda too. Like, she was like, okay, we can watch the Amanda Bynes show. Like, I'll watch that with you because she's funny.
Before we jump into all the Amanda Show, the female writers do speak, and that's Jenny Kligan and Christy Stratton. Christy started by saying working for Dan was like an abusive relationship. It was hard to navigate when the opportunity for women writers were few. And they ended up having to split salaries because Dan said, you know what, we don't have enough money, but want to hire you both.
This was interesting.
For sure.
It was very interesting to see how he abused adults versus children. And I just thought, I kept thinking to myself, God, this is a man who, like, basically his entire life was rejected by adult women. And then he became rich and powerful. And through that, I guess, realized that little girls can't, like, say no to him or, like, turn him down or whatever. And then he, as an adult, just started punishing women to like the deepest part of their fucking core, you know, to like make up for whatever shit that he went through being rejected. He's like, I'm just gonna make women feel like the most lowest, like that level of depravity and just like trying to make somebody feel bad. Like that's like on another level what he was doing to those writers.
Totally. And can we just say it out loud? Dan Schneider hates women. And that's why, like, Drake Bell had a different relationship with him than, say, Amanda Bynes. Like, he hates women, no matter if they're 8 or if they're 80. So he wanted Christy to say a line again, but pretend you're being sodomized.
Like, I mean, you can't tell me that this isn't a man that literally is like, I was so embarrassed by women, now I'm gonna make you, this stranger, pay for my fucking weird shit. And also on top of it, it's like, he clearly, because he doesn't desire women, he doesn't need anything from them. They're ex completely expendable to him. He doesn't even want sex from them.
He doesn't think they're funny. He doesn't think they deserve jobs. He does
Yeah.
not think women deserve rights, basically.
And if you're mad about it, then like, unfortunately, he could find some other person to write cum jokes on a children's show very, very easily. Like in his mind, you really are truly expendable.
Totally. And for him to have the audacity to be like, I didn't know my sets with Brian Peck were dangerous. It's like you were already fostering this in your writer's room.
That it Can we just very quickly touch on his response before we go too deep into this? Can we just like say on record that he obviously wrote all those questions? You know, he obviously paid that guy to just read the questions as he wrote them out. Like, and then he posted it on his website, like, not even a minute after. It's like clear. I mean, come, are you kidding me?
And I guess that that's from his YouTube, by the way. I gave the Hollywood Reporter shit, which I think we still should for like airing it, but they just ripped that from his YouTube. Like he already had that ready to go.
He for sure wrote out, he was writing those questions as the show was airing.
Totally. And just because Drake Bell didn't blame you for all this doesn't mean you're not in the hot seat, Dan Schneider.
Right. Yeah, that was like, it just shows how like deluded he is to think. And then he didn't touch on anything they spoke about in this whole show. He only
No.
talked about the stuff that he could easily explain.
Right, with the massages, he's like, yeah, that was looking back, not great. Shouldn't have done that. It's like, I hate you.
I know. It's like embarrassing massages from adults is the least actually of our concerns in this case, which is saying a lot. But thank you for, I guess, covering that, like fucking idiot.
So episode one does wrap up with like the Amanda show. It was Dan's first big break, and this is when they mentioned what you said earlier, how it's like a new brand of woman, because it said women were either cute or hypersexualized, and it showed like Hilary Duff. I'm like, she's 15.
Yeah. I know. I know. My God. It was like very well explained though. Like I just had never really thought about it that way, that Amanda did kind of open up like this different category, I guess, for like girls that they could market, you know? She was like a different kind of child star.
And then we end it with Karen Finley Thompson, who was an editor on the Amanda show. She said, quote, "I definitely saw Amanda and Dan being close on set many times, sitting behind him, hugging him, or giving him a neck massage. Dan and Amanda had a close relationship, and I didn't think anything more than that, but I did think the hot tub was weird."
Okay, speaking of the hot tub, that's another thing that, like, when you've seen these clips circulate for years and years and years, and people saying, that's weird, that's weird, that's weird, it's really surreal to see it on a documentary and not just like on Twitter, you know?
It is weird when like your niche thing that you're so interested in is like everyone's talking about it and you're kind of like, oh my God, you're getting so much wrong.
I know, I know, I know. And then I'm like, oh, you guys were also just like watching this on Twitter and being like, this is weird, this is weird, this is weird. Like, we were all kind of doing that and not realizing it or whatever.
Right.
But yeah. And I also just wanted to really quickly mention too, they obviously in the second part of the episode, or the second part, they go way more into this. At the end, they interview Raquel, who was like the sidekick on the Amanda show. And I thought it was so interesting that she was like, I knew like pretty much from day one, I am not the star of this show. Amanda's the star. I'm not going to be treated as such. And I'm just happy to be here. And it's another thing where it's like, Dan isn't attracted to black girls. So they're just not going to be important. You know, it's like, it really is like whatever he is attracted to or whatever he cares about is just the focal point of all children's programming. So that means black kids don't matter because Dan doesn't want to fuck them.
When she was talking about her 13th birthday cake and how Dan was yelling about how it was too expensive, like that
Yeah.
really broke my heart. Because obviously, when you're, I'm 30, and if someone, or 32, but if someone did that to me, I'd be upset.
I know. And to picture like her being like humiliated in front of an entire set on her birthday because she got a cake. Like, oh God.
So we jump to episode two, and this is the quote from the mother of Brandy. I did not write her name down, but she said, "I wanted to be an actress when I was young. My mother worked in Hollywood and knew what went on behind the scenes and never wanted my brother or I to have involvement in the movie industry. So I had some resentment. Years later, my daughter Brandy was very outgoing, full of life, full of personality. She was enamored with television. She had found what she wanted to do in life."
Say, so I'm sure you've seen people are just completely in shock by the behavior of this mom, right? Like, people are losing their shit. They're like, how could you do this? And you always hear people say, like, where are the parents? Like, that's like the main quote on anything involving this. You always hear people say, where are the parents? Where are the parents? Where's her mom? These are the parents. Like,
Right.
this is it. Like, these are the moms. Like, this is how it's always been. If anything, she's like a lesser evil of all the moms that, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always, and they always kind of talk the same. Like, they always have this like sappy Woe Is Me story about how they just didn't know and they were taken advantage of, and he seems so kind. Dina has said things like this. Lynn Spears talks like this. Like, this is the Carter mom. This is literally, she is like the face of child stars' parents. Like, I was happy that she was in this, and I was happy that she exposed herself, because people still really don't get it when it comes to the parents.
Hey everybody, now would be a good time to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Quince. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. So one thing about me is I am a sheets snob. I like to have a good set of sheets, especially in the summer, because listen, I sweat when I sleep, and that is just something I have to live with. But with Quince, they have incredible bamboo sheets that I love so much. It goes with your body temperature, so I'm not waking up super sweaty. It also has like weighted blankets, which Troy has talked about. There's so many good things over on Quince. You have to check it out. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/blinds for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/blinds to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/blinds.
This week's episode is also sponsored by ZocDoc. You know, when you get cornered by that aunt at a family gathering and you feel like you have to bend the truth, you know, the one who will ask you when you're getting married or what's going on with that promotion or why you haven't moved out of your mom and dad's basement, only for her to not really listen to what you're saying and judge you. While you may have to grin and bear it with your family, you shouldn't feel that way when talking to your doctor about that rash that weirdly looks like your high school crush. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not talking about a few, we're talking about tens of thousands of doctors, all with verified patient reviews, so you can make sure that the vibes are vibing before you meet IRL. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. Are you that one friend in your group that loves to treat yourself? It's okay, we all do. You're the person who gets a pedicure and you opt for the extra 10-minute foot massage and the green tea infused lotion. You refuse to make coffee at home because that fancy coffee shop is right downstairs. Well, if you treat yourself to the top options with everything in life, why settle when finding a doctor? It is your health after all. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified reviews. We all know that there are things in life that you have to compromise on. Things like maybe your apartment budget, the kind of car that you drive, etc. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, slash their family group chat drama, or whatever. Instead, check out ZocDoc. I know that for myself, like using ZocDoc and using things like this when I moved was really helpful for me. I felt really overwhelmed by going to the doctor when I moved to New York. Like, I was like, how do you go to the doctor in New York City? Like, I just don't even know how. So, ZocDoc is really great for that. And again, as I say all the time, anything that I can do from my bed, I'm guaranteed to do. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc that you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold for the receptionist. Go to ZocDoc.com/blinds and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/blinds, ZocDoc.com/blinds.
50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor, it's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios in Wondery comes the competition.
Host Shima Olieyi was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago.
Now she is returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks of 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after?
Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And you could tell she was still, like, longing for that actress big break for Brandy.
She was like, I wanted to be a star. Like, yeah. Most of them do, you know? Most of them, I mean, if you catch Dina Lohan on a good day, she'll tell you that she was a New York City Rockette, and it's not even true. You know what I mean? Like, this is them. These are the parents.
So we get introduced to Jason Handy, and what are your thoughts, Troy?
I mean, again, so like the face of everything they always say. He was so kind. He was so sweet. He seemed so down to earth. We trusted him. He just seemed so normal, blah, blah, blah. It's like, of course. You know, like, if you're a predator, you don't want to come off as mean. You want to make kids feel like they're going to be safe. It's your job to say, either way, you're a grown-ass man and my daughter's 8. So I don't really want you to have a deeply passionate email relationship. Doesn't matter if he seems nice.
What I thought was interesting was her actually saying she was nervous for being judged, which I think probably a lot of parents have when it comes to stuff like this. The guilt and being like, how could this happen under my watch? When, you know, this guy Jason is exchanging numbers and emails with a bunch of kids. It's like, yes, she could have stopped it, but I also don't think her way of thinking is so out of the realm of possibility.
No, not at all. Especially when you think like, oh, he thinks my kid is special. Like, you already view your child as like a commodity. Like, you're viewing your child as like something that's going to make you some money. So immediately shit gets warped. Like, I feel like if you are, this is like generally how I feel about it. If you're a parent of a kid and you go on a set and you get weird vibes, like, even, I know we're going to get to it, but even Drake's dad being like, oh, he was, you know, you're watching people groom kids. There are parents who would then grab their kid's arm and pull them the fuck, like, my mom would grab me by my throat, lift me off the ground, and take me out of whatever room I'm in after she saw men trying to groom me. She would. So it's like, there's parents that are like so warped that they stay and try and make sense and try and make it okay and talk themselves out of whatever. And then there are parents that are like, oh, fuck that. I'm out of here, you know?
Right. And all the parents do start by saying, you know, you hear what happens to kids in Hollywood. Just kind of like brushing that under the rug. Like, we know what could happen, but, you know, it's their dream. It's like, whose dream is it?
She's 7.
Right.
You know, she can't reach the top cabinets. I don't know if she has like fully realized dreams.
So Jason, he was a PA. His job was to walk the kids around set outside of the presence of their parents. He would also join like Bible study. In 2003, they searched and found a giant, basically a trove of child pornography, over 10,000 images along with videos, some down to the age of 7. And, you know, we find out later in the episode that Ziploc bags had girls' names on it. Each bag had some kind of token. There was a Ziploc bag of letters from a 7-year-old with a pair of her underwear.
So I have a theory that I want to run by you, because I feel like I had a revelation when I was watching it the second time that I didn't have the first time. And I was thinking about, so like, I remember watching interviews with these kids that were in movies directed by the guy who did Jeepers Creepers, who's now like a convicted pedophile.
Oh.
And yeah, and he like, basically he was doing this thing where he would like set up movie sets and like have a bunch of kids be in these movies. Like, he has like a clown horror movie where all these kids are in it. And it actually was like a CP set, but he filmed a movie as well. So he was able to then release a movie, make money, and also make porn and like sell it, because he has a full ass set and a bunch of kids. And it made me think, like, there's absolutely no way that, like, the raw, unedited footage of these kids doing like these weird things wasn't being distributed. Like Ariana Grande pouring water and shit on herself. Like we saw an edited down version of that some creep had to edit. You cannot tell me that after years and years and years and years and years of making content like this, having pedophiles all over the set with nicknames and shit, they were selling this shit. I'm sorry. Like there's, I just believe that in my spirit.
I would totally agree with you. I mean, even in the later episodes, which we'll talk about, it's like Dan walking around with his handheld camera. It's like, obviously, we never saw this scene. So what I'm about to say is alleged. I don't, you know, whatever. But like, who's to say he didn't pop into a dressing room and be like, oh, I'm sorry. Or that was my first thought, was him being able to get away with things and then being like, oh, it's for my vlog. I didn't realize. I'm sorry.
I'm just like, there's no way that that footage was just staying with him. He's walking around filming these kids all the time. Why?
I mean, we read the full Diddy doc, and so many names were just a part of that that you wouldn't think of. So I can't even imagine. I mean, Dan Schneider, we'll talk about the X-Men producer writing for Brian Peck, and X-Men is attached to Bryan Singer, so you can only imagine.
And I mean, I just even like Brian Peck calling himself Pickle Boy. I'm like, that's some weird fucking inside joke between this pedophile ring that is happening on the set. And I'm just like, I please God never let me find out how he got the nickname or who gave it to him, for the love of God.
Totally. Just real quick to wrap up on Jason Handy, they did find a quote from his diary that says, I've been giving into my attraction to young girls. I even struggle on a day-to-day basis on how to find a victim to rape if I have to. I truly believe pedophiles cannot be fixed. I am someone, I think it's like a rapist, whether it, for like adults, I guess I'll say. It's like that pattern is there for life.
I agree. I think that they just get better at, like coming off as like normal. Like, obviously, he was like really good at coming off as normal. And you have to wonder, like, if this guy is a pedophile, he clearly, if he's keeping Ziploc baggies of like mementos from like molesting people, kids, like obviously the people around him know. And if they're also pedophiles, it's like this show is just a mask. Like they basically are having their cake and eating it too. They have this situation where they have a bunch of kids that are willing to work, make them millions, will make Dan millions, make everybody else a living. And on top of it, they have the ability to like be creeps. It's almost like the show itself is an afterthought. And really, at the end of the day, not to like whatever, but like, how hard is it to write knock knock jokes about kids falling on banana peels and shit? It's not like they were in there writing Schindler's List. This is like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's funny because I always held all that like really high because I loved it growing up and I thought it was like an SNL for kids. But rewatching some of the skits and stuff, I'm like, did I even find that funny? Or was I just told that was funny?
I know. I thought about that too. I was like, damn, we must have just been responding to the kids. Like, I just thought the kids were so cool because they were like living some version of like our dream. And it seemed like they were just having fun. I don't know if I ever genuinely thought a lot of it was like keel over funny, but I just loved the children. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, God, like these kids are like being treated like adults.
The news portion with Lori Beth was always my favorite.
Yeah, and like that's the other thing is like even though Dan's humor was like really weird and not funny, the kids were all so funny that they made it funny. Like Lori Beth was really funny.
Lori Beth is an icon.
I know. I wish that we got to hear from her.
After Jason Handy, they talked a little bit with What I Like About You, but what really jumped out to me was Amanda's almost emancipation. So if you guys didn't watch or didn't catch this, she was 16, dating someone older, but still lived at home. Her parents said she couldn't do that. Like she couldn't keep dating this old man who wasn't revealed, and she ran away from home and went to Dan's. And the quote is, "The details are murky. Amanda wanted to be emancipated and wanted more independence, and her parents were furious at how Dan handled it."
Yeah, I thought that this was like a real important segment because, like, this is her crossroads, you know?
Honestly, all I could think of was, like, would this have been like an Aaliyah R. Kelly situation if that emancipation happened?
Yeah, I know. And I don't know why in my mind, like, I didn't know. First of all, I didn't even know that What I Like About You was a Dan show. I didn't know that.
Neither did I.
Like, in my mind, Amanda leaving Nickelodeon was her, like, ending her working relationship with Dan. I didn't realize that he just, like, followed her to her next gig, basically. And what I thought was so interesting was them, you know, them talking about the emancipation and stuff and how, you know, she felt like she was an adult and, like, you couldn't tell her anything and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, why the fuck would she not think that? She was literally the lead female comic on a network show on her own. She was in a television show at 8. Why would she not, by the time she's a teenager, feel adult? Of course. You've been treating her like a full-ass a woman since she was a literal child. And also, Dan, this is what he's been, like, working towards their whole relationship, was, like, infiltrating her life, separating her from the people around her. Her parents already seem weird as fuck, so of course he's saying, well, you know, you can't trust them, and, like, thank God you have me, and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I was just like, God, like, he's been grooming her since she was 8 years old for this exact moment.
Totally. And they didn't dive into it deep enough, in my opinion, that he wasn't allowed on the What I Like About You set eventually. Mm-hmm. I wish they talked more about that. Who's in that show? Jenny Garth?
Yes.
Jenny, we need to talk to you.
Yeah. Because what? Like, I would love to know how, I just would love to know what they were all thinking. Like, because obviously by that point he had a reputation and everybody was, like, so scared of him, you know?
Totally. And I was wondering if the older guy she was dating was Nick Zano, because I know they dated when she was on What I Like About You, or if that was just, like, a front for whoever she was actually dating.
I was going to ask you about that, because remember when we read in her blinds that, like, she was just having insane amounts of sex on that set and everybody knew and wasn't saying anything? And it's like, yeah, of course. She thinks she's a grown-ass woman. Like, she has every right to think that in her head, that she's, I'm independent, I've been making millions of dollars for people, I have run a television show, they've all, everything I've done has been successful, you know? And also on top of it, it's like, they had been work, you know, they make it a point to say, like, she was ready to change her public image. Like, mm-hmm. She was like, I don't want to be even associated with children's shows anymore. I want to look adult, I want to be an adult, I want to be treated like an adult, I want to work as much as I feel like working. Like, it's crazy.
Listen, if I was 16 paying all the bills for my entire family, no one would be able to tell me anything.
Are you kidding me? And you've been told that you're a prodigy basically your whole life, that you are this, like, not human child, like, you're just above all children. Of course. Hello.
So then we jump to the All That revival. And I thought it was interesting how they were like, they treated Dan like Charlie from Charlie's Angels. And I remember the Dan phone. It's like all these things watching, it's so many, it brings back so many memories. And that's why it's extra upsetting too.
Him writing himself into the show as this, like, big hotshot producer that everybody caters to. He's, like, being fed grapes and shit. Like, just insane. Absolutely fucking insane. Like, all that stuff. Yeah, it was all coming back to me. Like, oh my God, the Dan phone. No.
So Kyle Sullivan, he comes in. He says you could get away with more. And Brian Earn, he said, I got my family out the hood. And we're ignoring child labor laws, though. He said Dan had a nicer relationship with the white kids. And they set up Brian's first scene like he was a drug dealer and then made him do the little fetus rap.
Fucking the little fetus thing is so, oh, it's so just, what the fuck were we watching?
And I do remember watching that being like, what the fuck is going on?
Like, yeah, okay. Can we talk about that? Even as kids, like, I felt creeped out sometimes by these skits.
Well, the second round of all that, I was probably like 11 to 13.
That would make sense.
I think I was starting to like age out of Nickelodeon to begin with, but Lil Fetus, I was just like, at first I was like, what even is a fetus? Like, what's happening?
Right. It's so just like weird and sinister. And like, it's like he said, like, you know, I think it was him that said it. One of them said it, like, this is obviously some weird, like, adult male. It's like an extreme fetish, which again, just proves to me that this was being double distributed. Like, there were people getting versions of these sketches and stuff that weren't edited, of kids just in leotards having shit poured on them. And, you know, I also think I wrote in my notes that I feel like Dan or whoever was like watching this shit with him, he must have some sort of like humiliation fetish.
I was just about to say that, because we're about to get into like the Fear Factor and the Sugar and Coffee set. Like, he wanted to let those kids know that they had zero power.
Yeah. And like, it's fun for me to watch you like be really embarrassed in physical pain. Like, I really think that he has some like really extreme kink for like hurting kids too. Not even just sexually, but like literally putting them in like physically dangerous situations. It feels fetishy. Being like, I'm going to lay here and fucking Chinese water torture you and do all this crazy shit.
Totally. And I also think it goes with his like super fragile ego. I think one of the best things about Dan, much like Diddy, is their ego will be the death of them.
Yeah, they can't help it.
They can't. So Fear Factor, where like kids are getting peanut butter licked off of them and having to sit in worms. I guess I didn't think that the worms were even real. So to know that all this shit was actually real is terrifying.
I mean, even now, like, I always have this assumption, like, you know, when they do weird shit with like animals and stuff on TV, it's like, oh, the snakes are non-venomous and the spiders don't bite and the bats are not rabies. Like, I just like assume that they've been like, you know, curated or whatever. So to see these kids just licking scorpion tails, I was like, okay, like, you really, I mean, this is like insane.
And I do have to give a shout out to Virgil, who seemed to want to help the kids, but he was fired for kind of like speaking out, being like, Dan, stop playing pranks on fucking everyone. And a director ended up firing him. Dan didn't even fire him himself. He sent a director over to send Virgil home.
That was so sad, because you could tell that, I mean, first of all, just the way that people that try and protect these kids, the way that they get pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to be able to see what that looks like behind the scenes. Like, they pushed him out because he clearly didn't want to partake in their little like boys club that they had going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the episode ends with our introduction to who Brian Peck is and like his role on this set and the whole Pickle Boy thing. And if there's one thing that I have a visceral memory of, like, just burned into my brain at the very top of my list, like what I think of when I think of these shows is him with those goddamn pickles. Because that's the other thing, like you just said, these men are all narcissists. So, like, he wanted to be on the show all the time. And I just, those pickles. Like, I'm just like, God, that fucking... the image of him holding that tray, like, I can't get it out of my mind.
The scene with Ray Romano, I'm like, oh, it's a glory hole. They're fully having a glory hole on television right now.
Yeah. And yeah, and like the actors that would come on and like participate, I'm just like, really? But yeah, we find out that Brian Peck is like really good friends with Dan. But like also Dan has like made it a point to try and act like Brian is like, he's the bad one. Dan's the good one. That's like his whole MO. Brian is a convicted pedophile.
And he didn't hire Brian.
I didn't hire Brian. I had nothing to do with that. And I can't believe that they let him work. Girl.
One thing that is not being talked enough about, in my opinion, is the fact that Brian was pen pals with John Wayne Gacy.
I mean, can we talk? Can we talk? Excuse me?
The fact that little Kyle Sullivan was in Brian Peck's bedroom and he was showing him handwritten notes from John Wayne Gacy, and no one at this barbecue, where parents were there as well, it wasn't just kids, no one was like, hey, what the fuck?
It's like, obviously my brain immediately goes to like, what kind of shit were they talking about? I want all those letters. Those are the letters I want between him and him. What were they chit-chatting and small talking and kikiing about while Brian is working on a set surrounded by vulnerable kids and making softcore porn?
You go to this man's house, you see the John Wayne Gacy of it all, but you also see that his garage is a shrine to Planets of the Apes. I'd be running so fucking fast.
And he's one of, I will say, like, where the other guy was named Jason, where Jason was like charming, and I guess you could say, you know, he was like pretending to be Christian and shit. I guess you could say, like, yeah, I would be charmed by him. Ryan Peck, that man exude, like, he fucking sweats creepiness. He just gives off that vibe, like, where you would, I like, you would grip your kid's hand a little tighter, like, when he walks by you, like, ooh, that guy was weird.
Best way to describe that for sure.
Yeah.
Episode two wraps up with August 2003. It's a weird table read. Dan asks the parents. Okay. Dan asking the parents to leave the room so he could tell them Brian Peck was arrest or was arrested for sexual assault against a minor.
Even just the description of that, of them being like, all right, parents, we're just going to talk to the kids about how this man that they've been working with is now a pedophile. We're going to interrogate them about who told. What?
Because you know it was an interrogation.
Sure. For sure. And like those poor kids, like, first of all, not even knowing what the fuck was going on, being told that. And then immediately being scared to death that they're gonna get in trouble. It's just like so overwhelming. And for the parents to be told to leave the room, I just picture my mom. Like, I just picture my mom. Like, there's no way that she would have left me in that room alone. Like, there's no way.
And one quote that Giovanni Samuels said, she said, you get comfortable with people until you're not. And I was like, that's all you got to say. Like, we can read in between every line that she just said.
She's great in this, by the way.
I loved her so much on All That, and seeing her again, like, really, like, I can't explain it. Like, obviously, it's for a sucky situation, but it's like, you look so good, Giovanni, and it makes me happy.
And she's still so magnetic and charming. And like,
Such a light.
yeah, she's amazing. So we definitely want to continue this conversation. Obviously, there are more episodes to talk about. We have to talk about the Drake of it all. There's just a lot more to discuss. So we are going to continue this conversation on our Patreon. We're going to cover the remainder of these episodes. And yeah, and there's also just a bunch of legality and crazy shit going on and people being sued, and it's just a lot. And it's also, it gets very dark. You guys know that we like to cover extremely dark shit on Patreon. And it's not to say that all of this hasn't been insane. But the Drake stuff really is like wild. So, yeah, we're going to continue the conversation.
And we thank you guys for listening. We will talk to you next week. Please make sure to rate, subscribe, all of that. But yeah, we don't want to get sued, so it does have to go on Patreon.
We love you and we appreciate you. And we hope that you enjoyed this first portion of the conversation.